Chapman. Let's bring this love fest to order.
Nothing's opening up.
We'll get everybody up here. Welcome to the May 7th, 2013 board meeting. It's great to see so many faces out there, and it's going to be a fun evening. It's about time we had a little fun in one of these board meetings, and this is about the best kind. We met in closed session, and we heard a matter on a student personnel matter stipulated expulsion. We conferenced with labor negotiators, a negotiator of an unrepresented employee, and provided instructions. Suggestion, everybody all right with that? I'd like to
add 9.03 as well.
I'd like to see.
I said 9.03 as well.
We're front loading all the celebrating. That's what we're doing. So everybody have a good time and get home. And okay, is there any other changes in the order of business? Okay, seeing none. We'll move on to action on closed session item. We have one item we need to take action on. I'll entertain a motion.
I move approval of the recommendation.
For student A.
Yes, for student A.
Okay.
I'll second that.
Okay, we have a motion by Mr. Unger, a second by Mr. Questenberry. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Passes 7-0. And we have approval of the minutes. We have two sets. The first is for April 23rd, 2013.
I'll move approval of the minutes for April 23rd, 2013.
And I'll second that. Motion by Mrs. Sheffer, second by the chair. Are there any discussion or corrections to those minutes? Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Passes 7-0. Move on to the special board meeting of April 30th, 2013. And I'll move approval of those minutes.
I'll second that.
Okay. Motion by the chair, second by Mr. Unger. Any discussion, corrections? None? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? No. Opposed, zero. Passes 7-0. Sorry, I was already moving ahead to our student.
Blair?
Yes.
There was a slight glitch in the consensus to the agenda, so if I can try one more time without stumbling over my numbers. I'd like to move item 11.07, which is the field trips, up to or close by the Skills USA announcements.
Make it so, if everybody's in agreement.
Thank you.
And we have our SLO High student representative who is ready to fill us in on what's going on at SLO High.
Thank you. All right, so my name is Scott Hicks. I'm the SLO High student representative. ASB news. We had our prom over the weekend with over 425 students in attendance. It was our Bollywood Bash. And it was a junior class fundraiser, and it was a huge success. Everyone was saying they had a great time, and next year's senior class will have a good budget to work with. This week is our Staff Appreciation Week. We have a lot of posters and signs around campus thanking our staff for everything they do. And the ASB class is also doing a secret buddy kind of deal where each student in the class has five teachers' names, and every day of the week they do something nice for that teacher, like bake them cookies or, you know, something cool. So that's exciting. And at the end of this week, we have a staff barbecue. So we're treating our staff nice as they deserve to be treated. And in sports, five out of our seven teams this season are for sure in CIF. Most likely six out of seven. We'll find out next year with baseball. So that is boys volleyball, track, boys tennis, boys and girls swim and dive, boys golf, and again, most likely boys baseball. So that's fantastic. AP testing started this week, and it will go through next week. We have 356 students taking over 620 AP tests. So with our 1,400 student body, we got a lot of academically oriented students. And we completed STAR testing as of today, so that's exciting. And on May 21st, we are having our senior recognition assembly, and this is where we acknowledge all the graduating seniors and all the great things they'll be doing after high school. Also, the 8th graders from Laguna Middle School will be visiting that day, so the ASB class will be giving them tours, and they'll also be able to see the assembly so they can get it all in perspective, what these wonderful 4 years will be for them and what the end goal is. On the 22nd of May, right after that, is our annual Tiger Fest, as well as the Academic Awards Night. All are welcome at 6:30. It's a nice open house, and it's a lot of fun. And we're wrapping up the end of the year. The senior picnic's coming up, grad night, senior showcase, 24-hour relay. Everyone's pumped for that. And so Slo High is doing it big. So thank you.
Go ahead, Kath.
I just wanted to say that congratulations are in order to Mr. Hicks, who was elected president of the ASB of Slo High.
Wow, excellent. No doubt aided by your awesome communication skills. Thank you for that report. Now we're going to move on to student awards for Skill USA and other competition. And who's going to handle that, Dr. Prier?
For the Skills USA, so I'd like you to present the medalists for this year.
All right. Thank you very much. First, I want to call up the, I'll start with my students, Zoltan, Max, and Meshach. Want to come on up? We went to the Skills USA competition, the state competition in San Diego. Some other teachers will also introduce their students in just a moment. In the automotive service technology category, Zoltan Shapiro was our gold medalist, and this is him all decked out right here. Max Hokett was a silver medalist at the state contest. And Meshach Burton participated and was sixth place at that and did not get a medal. They only put a medal for first, second, third. But the reason why I have Max also here with Meshach is they were my Ford AAA troubleshooting team just this past Friday down in Pomona, and they finished second together as a team in the state of California. So. They had trophies to bring up, but I think they thought it was a little too overwhelming, so they left them back there. Also, in addition to that, they had the highest written score in combined score in the state of California, so they got a trophy for that. So it's a hands-on contest and written, and I hope you don't mind me inserting that. Those are our students. Thank you so much. Tim Fay is going to bring up his students now in the categories of drafting and metal and welding.
Oh, good evening, guys. This is our crew of San Luis High, this other areas that we compete in. You'll see several tonight. So I have four welding students up here. Daniel Thorson won the combo welding. He'll be advancing to the Nationals in Kansas City later this summer, as well as Jeremy Rands won the technical drafting. So he'll be advancing as well. Right behind Jeremy was Mason Harper, who won second place, the silver medal in the technical drafting. And Daniel Herrera there won the silver medal in the oxyacetylene welding. Anna Mullen won the silver medal in the gas tungsten inert TIG welding. And Will Kramer won in the shield of metal arc welding category. And Jan Fetcho wants to add to the excitement here with her students as well.
I took several students in computing categories, and Joey Arhar won in computer programming. We also took second and third, thereby sweeping the category, which is very nice. And Austin Wright here took third place. We had a couple other medal winners who couldn't be with us tonight. John O'Chadwell, who was the one right in between the two of them, See him there? Alec Griffith, who took first place in technical math, and Prince Singh, who took third place in computer maintenance technology. So Joey and Alec Griffith are going to compete at the Nationals in June. Thank you. And now I want to present to you Diana Chu, who was a local area recipient from the National Center of Women and Information for Women and Information Technology. This chapter's at Cal Poly. She was one of 10 winners locally. Locally means from Monterey County out to Fresno and down to Ventura. She was the only winner from our high school, and this is the second year in a row that she's done it. And we have this lovely plaque to leave with you, so that we can remember that she did this, and hopefully next year she'll be one of the national winners. It was a great honor. It came with a cash prize, and that she's going to put to good use.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair?
Yes. Bart. We have Liz Moore coming.
Hi, I'm Liz Moore from Morro Bay High School, and we had some Skills USA contestants as well. We took a group of photography students and some digital cinema. That's the new title. These are our digital cinema gold medal winners. You can see the video that they created on our website.
Thank you. Wow. I'm sorry, I started to read the inscription on here, and I got me all discombobulated. And I'm seconded by Mrs. Eisendrath Rogers. So, and do we want anybody from the public who would like to speak on this item? Okay, seeing no one, yes, please.
Good. Sorry, I wasn't sure if I needed to put in a speaker's card. My name's Pat Mullen. I am the District 3 representative on the Cuesta College Board of Trustees. That's right, and president of the Cuesta Board of Trustees. But I'm here tonight to speak as a parent of three students that have gone through San Luis High and two that are currently, or that also actively have been involved in the skills program. I just wanted to reinforce to the board, I don't know if any of you have been to one of those state skills competitions or the national, but I've had the good fortune of attending with your students as well as Cuesta students. And to be down there in San Diego at the state level and see 2,500 students go through this process, not only are they graded on how well their technical skill is, but they're also trained and graded on doing a resume, on their interview skills. Many of them have to do an interview. A lot of those things that really help them not only be able to showcase their technical skill that they learn here in your career and technical ed departments, but also those softer skills that really make them employable and help them succeed, whether they go straight to a four-year college, a technical school, or straight into the job force. So I just wanted to share with you, you know, from my perspective, how encouraging it is the way our district supports career and technical education and supports our faculty and our students. Because when you're down there and you see in this convention hall of 2,500 students, the names of all the high schools come up and you see San Luis High, Morro Bay High continue to come up way more than other schools, and you see the value our students are gaining from the instructors here in these programs. It's just phenomenal. And then when you go to the national level, there are students from all 50 states representing all the states, as well as Guam, Puerto Rico, U.S. Virgin Islands. And it's amazing when you go to an arena and there's more than 5,000 of those students. They're so impressive. And to have our students compete at that level and win as much as they do is really a testament to your support for career and technical education. So I just wanted to thank you and just add that and really appreciate it. Thanks again.
Thank you. I appreciate your comments. Now we'll move on to the... We have a motion regarding 11.07. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Passes 7-0. Too proud. Work in Kansas City, kids. Thanks. Pinkerton, we are going to do the Teacher of the Year, or Employee of the Year
Employees
first.
Employees of the Year Thank first. You. Employees of the Year first. So.
Thank you.
Actually, if I can have all the board members come up front, I'd love for you to congratulate our Employees of the Year as they come through. So if you can come up and just stand here in the front section. We're going to be honoring our Teacher of the Year, not only our nominees, but also our official San Luis Coastal Teacher of the Year in just a few minutes. And we are focused on students learning, teaching that goes on in the classroom. But we realize that it's not only the classroom teacher that makes a huge difference in the lives of our students. And so we have outstanding employees in San Luis Coastal. Through the Employee Recognition Program, we are able to, each year, honor four distinct categories and individuals through this award system. And so the four categories, just so that everybody knows, is physical support, clerical, school support, and administration. So without any further ado, I'm going to have Diane Frost come up, and she's going to introduce our physical support nominee, or winner, actually.
Good evening. I'm Diane Frost. I'm the principal of Laguna Middle School, and I would like to ask to join me Gary Edmondson. He is our lead custodian on campus, and he is the Physical Support Employee of the Year for San Luis Coastal Unified School District. I'd love to say a few words about Gary as he shakes everybody's hand. Gary's been in the district for almost 10 years, 8 years at Laguna Middle School. He worked nights for 7 years, leading our crew and cleaning our campus. He's meticulous when it comes to the appearance of classrooms and grounds, and he's proactive in responding to issues that he sees. Last year, Gary interviewed and earned the position of daytime crew chief, so he moved from nights to days, which brings a very...
Thank you very much. Next, if I could have... Rita Delkiskamp come forward, and she will be announcing our Clerical Employee of the Year.
So Cheryl Hill, please come on up. Hold it for you. That's okay. Just stand right here. We're going to do this a little differently. Cheryl is our Clerical Employee of the Year, and I just wanted to read a little bit of her evaluation because it speaks to why we nominated her for that. Cheryl is dynamic, adaptable, and professional. She demonstrates respect and collaboration, patiently sharing her knowledge and experience with new staff. Cheryl solves problems and shares her best thinking in order to help our department produce its best work. She is a learner who can be counted on to assume new responsibilities and learn new technologies with caution and intelligence in order to enhance our performance. Cheryl Hill brings strength, stability, and a smile to our department. And like this flower, she quietly and humbly stands out in a crowd. Thank you, Cheryl.
One more photo op, Cheryl. One more photo op, please.
In the middle there, if you could.
And if I can have Dan Block come forward. Dan is going to introduce our School Support Employee of the Year.
Okay, where's the zoom on this?
There.
I'll do it. Okay, there we go. See what I'm saying here?
Should I start with her up here?
Sure.
Could I bring up... Dan Block from Bishop Speak and Teach, and I want Val Davies to join me up here. Val started working at the school 18 years ago, brought with her three children to Bishop Speak at the time, through their involvement at the school, Val started getting involved. She is, as I look at the categories, I think she does all four categories at the school. One, a teacher saw her sitting down, didn't recognize her. She's buzzing around the campus at all times. She does crossing guard for us. She does noon duty for us. She works in the classroom. She covers the office. She does my job most of the time with me out on the yard and does it much better than I do. She is a joy to work with, her sense of humor with kids, with staff, and yet just the tenacity of making sure that kids are safe where they're supposed to be gives me great relief when I'm not there, gives my teachers great support in the classroom. I mentioned all the jobs she does, and she does each one of them so skillfully. Give you a quick story about crossing guard. A couple weeks ago, we had a missing sixth grader, and he had gone home with another student. Unbeknownst to the parent, in modern technology, the cell phone wasn't being answered. Half an hour in the office, the parents get more and more agitated and concerned that something had happened. Val hears the all call two blocks away at the crossing guard for a missing student, thinks that she might have heard the name, wasn't sure who they said, but her intuition told her to call. Yes, she'd seen the kid. He was walking home. We knew where he was because Val knows every student's name. In the classrooms, if I add a student, they often say, will Val be around to help out? She volunteers in all of our upper grade classrooms, is laminating today, doing just a myriad of things, and is just such a highly regarded employee there. Out on the yard with kids, she treats each one as individuals, and she is a special person. Her family's here tonight as well, recognizing her. Many of my staff are here as well, and incredibly humble. The other day when Dr. Prater and the team was there, they were going on about her attributes. Val didn't think for a second it was her until I think they said Val Davies. But Val Davies.
And Mr. Andrus, if you can come forward, please.
Thank you. Thank you, Val.
And Mr. Andrus will be telling us the administrator.
Is it okay if I help coach the volleyball team? She's turned a team that won one game into a team that tonight is in the second round of CIF championships. So, multi-talented. The one thing that I appreciate the most about Kathy is a stalwart champion of our students. They come to her not only as the assistant principal, but they come to her seeking counseling, seeking support, seeking that person that they know they can rely on that's going to have their best interest in heart. One of the things that was bothering Kathy was seeing how many of our kids came to school in tattered clothes, living in situations that were difficult for them. And one day she just decided to start the Pirate Plaza, which is a clothing closet, to provide clothing to students. And she got the idea. She said, hey, do you think this is a good idea? I said, of course. And by the end of the day, just walking the halls and talking to teachers, she had quite a handful of money to go ahead and start. And we are now being able to distribute clothes to students who come to school and need that help. She got a check today from a lady who was passing through and talked to someone who heard about what Kathy was doing, and so she stopped and mailed her a check because she recognized the importance of that program. Story after story that I can tell about Kathy. The important thing to walk away with is when students come to Morro Bay High School, we ask them often, do you have an adult that you know you can trust? And often the response from kids is, well, you can always talk to Bueller. And that, more than anything else, to me, sums up why about half of our staff signed on to nominate her as District Administrator of the Year. So congratulations, Kathy.
Thank you. Photo op, real quick. Hey, we're not done. So first of all, I want to thank all of the families, students, staff who came out to support our Employees of the Year. Thank you for being here. And we are going to roll right into our Teacher of the Year presentation, as well as our Teacher of the Year nominees. And we truly are blessed with outstanding teachers in San Luis Coastal Unified School District. I can tell you, reading through the nominations that people send in, from parents, from other teachers, from employees in the district, it's amazing the stories and the things that they have to say about how far our teachers go for our students outside of the classroom, in terms of all the things that they do, as well as their focus on instruction and making sure that our students are achieving at their highest abilities. So with that said, I'm going to first have the Teacher of the Year nominees come up. We have a certificate for them, and we'll have them stay, and then we'll go ahead and we will announce our San Luis Coastal Teacher of the Year. So first of all, if I can have Nancy Bedrigian come forward. Nancy is an art and physical education teacher at Laguna Middle School. Next, Bryn Bellier. Bryn is a band teacher at Los Osos Middle School as well as Morro Bay High School. Next up is David Buckmoyer. Chemistry and physics teacher, San Luis High School. Our next nominee was Charlie Perez. Charlie is an English and social science teacher at Los Osos Middle School. Our next nominee is Caroline Rayburn. Caroline Rayburn is a third and fourth grade combination teacher at Monarch Grove Elementary School. Our next nominee is Lauren Villa. Ladies and gentlemen, these are our Teacher of the Year nominees. Mr. Buckmore's got a big smile on his face. He's retired. And next, I will have Mrs. Dinelli come up from Baywood Elementary School, our principal, to announce our Teacher of the Year.
Okay. Good evening. Thank you for having me tonight. I'd like to say a few words about our Teacher of the Year before I invite her up. There are many folks that are out here in the audience tonight, teachers, parents, children, other school staff who have known Cherie for many years. And I think those of us who know Cherie, there's one thing that we can't really help but be touched by, not just her talent, but also her passion and her leadership and this just human presence she has. She is an outstanding example of excellence as an educator. And her involvement with our school community and her phenomenal results with her kids in the classroom truly make her stand out among the best. When I thought about how to articulate this tonight, as to what makes her so excellent, I first wanted to tell you the many stories and things that she does, the intentional acts I see her do with kids every day. Like one morning, early before school starts, I walk into her classroom and I see her students from last year, who are now second graders, cozied up with her first graders, coaching them on reading. Or This year she has a student in her class who she has worked all year to create a Braille library for, so that he has the ability to do partner reading with all of the other kids in the class. Or something that I love that I hear Mrs. Newell say all the time is, she says, that's an opportunity. Whenever there's a challenge, a student has a difficulty, she sees it as an opportunity to make a difference. So as you can imagine, as I made this list, it quickly grew too long to give you all of these examples, because they're really just actions. And I think anybody who's watched Cherie work is struck by much more than the actions she does. There's just something on a very human level that touches your heart. And I think it's the common theme woven through all her work, and it's truly and simply her depth of caring. When I watch Cherie, I know she cares enough to be moved to action, to go above and beyond what is comfortable, to be curious and to explore, to pursue unlikely possibilities, and to push through difficulties, to lead and to inspire. She cares enough to show up every day with the spirit of gratitude to be able to serve our children, our colleagues, and our community. Across our nation right now, a new vision's been set with the Common Core and rigorous standards for all of our students to achieve. And I believe it is educators like Cherie who will show us the way to keep rigor and creativity at the forefront while allowing students to guide us. Cherie is just a superb teacher and a tremendous asset to San Luis Coastal. I am truly proud and honored to introduce you to San Luis Coastal's Teacher of the Year, Cherie Newell.
What's left to say?
I guess I'll keep you here.
Okay,
Thank you, Mrs. Denali. Good evening. When Dr. Prater and Mr. Pinkerton and Mr. Robinette graciously came out to Baywood Elementary to announce that I had been named Teacher of the Year, I was overwhelmed and speechless. How? How did this happen? That was the question that kept repeating in my mind. And so I would like to thank you tonight for allowing me some time to just map out for you how I believe I got here. My first grade students recently were reading a story titled Me on the Map. And I thought, hey, this story, geographic locations, are a good analogy for the different relationships I have in my life to explain how I can stand here tonight. The story begins with the character in her room. This intimate, cozy spot for me is my faith and my family. I have been blessed and supported by a loving husband for 30 years, Scott. Every day, he models for me how to give back to our community through volunteer work and his commitment towards integrity to his own job, which is very challenging at times. My mom, Eileen, who is here, she lightens my load by running my son to many of his activities while I'm working. We work a lot of hours. and she not only volunteers in my class every year, but she encourages me and she loves me unconditionally, like every good mom should. My 8-year-old son, Jesse, he inspires me daily with his creativity and abounding energy and his love. He also keeps me pretty relatable to my students and their families with his wacky sense of humor. Next, you see the girls' home up in the frame. For Baywood Elementary is that home for this teacher. Many of you don't know this, but my very first student teacher, you see the road and the address. For me, that's the Baywood Los Osos families. Our families are amazing. They start up programs for us. They volunteer in our classrooms. They're behind the scenes. They started up enrichment programs before school and after school, all to support not just their own children, but all of our students and us as well. They're also really known for their good cooking, which they share with us throughout the year, thank goodness. Finally, we come to the town. And San Luis Coastal Unified School District is where it all comes together. And I have been given so many opportunities to grow as an educator and as a person in this district. I'm excited about the direction we're heading in with the Common Core just around the corner. I know I am doing some of the best teaching of my career because I'm seeing more than ever before genuine student-led deep thinking from my students. The focus for me has shifted from projects and products to process and progress, where students not only problem solve, but they discuss and present evidence of their to support the thinking. These are exciting times to be a part of San Luis Coastal Unified School District and the teaching profession. So it is with a full and grateful heart that I want to thank you so much for this honor tonight and for coming out and supporting me tonight. God bless you.
One last photo.
Wait.
We're going to take a couple, okay? One there, hang on one second. Perfect. Yes. Oh, absolutely. Yes, so it truly is an honor to really be able to recognize some outstanding employees that we have in our district. The two resolutions that are up next up for the board to look at, one is the resolution to establish a Teacher of the Day, or actually Day of the Teacher, I should say, for the San Luis Coastal. I was close. It's been a long month. So we have the Day of the Teacher resolution as well as Classified Employee Week. So, and just really quick with that, we have wonderful public support with our PTAs throughout all of our schools, and they do wonderful things for our staffs. So I really want to thank all of the parents and community members who do so much to celebrate our teachers as well as all of our employees. So thank you.
Thank you. I'm going to have Ken do it. Mrs. Holmes, could you possibly read the resolution for 9.02, Day of the Teacher?
This is a proclamation designating May 8, 2013 as Day of the Teacher. Whereas it is appropriate that we recognize our teachers and express gratitude for the interest and concern they have for our students, and whereas our teachers frequently and often selflessly participate in non-classroom activities that enhance the education of our students, and whereas along with academic instruction, teachers provide students with valuable guidance, support, and encouragement towards helping students become tomorrow's leaders, and whereas providing quality education to our young people continues to be our never-ending challenge as it represents society's greatest and most lasting gift to new generations. And whereas the future of our state and country depends largely on the work of dedicated and professional teachers, and whereas school teachers are relied upon to ensure that our children receive proper instruction in a wide range of subjects, now therefore be it resolved that the Board of Trustees of San Luis Coastal Unified School District proclaims May 8, 2013 as Day of the Teacher and encourages all citizens to participate in observance to express their appreciation.
So, Mrs. Holmes, could you read that resolution, please?
This is a proclamation designated May 19th to 25th, 2013, as Classified School Employees Week. Whereas classified school employees provide valuable services to the schools and students of the district, and whereas classified school employees contribute to the establishment and promotion of a positive instructional environment, and whereas classified school employees serve a vital role in providing for the welfare and safety of the district students, and whereas classified employees employed by the district and represented by California School Employees Association, Service Employees International Union, and Confidential Employee Units strive for excellence in all areas relative to the educational community, now therefore be it resolved that the Board of Trustees of San Luis Coastal Unified School District hereby recognizes and wishes to honor the contribution of the classified school employees to quality education in the state of California and in San Luis Coastal Unified School District, and declares the week of May 19th to 25th, 2013 as Classified School Employee Week.
We'll go to the public if anyone would like to address the board on this item. Okay, seeing no one, Mrs. Roger, would you like to make a motion?
Thank you. I am proud to move approval of resolution number 17-12-13.
And I will second.
Excellent.
Oh. 18-12-13. Gotcha.
Okay. Any further discussion? Oh, we did. Catherine seconded. Okay, Mrs. Holmes, roll
call. Mrs. Roger. Dr. Eisendrath Rogers. Mr. Buckman.
Yes.
Mr. Unger.
Yes.
Mr. Millar.
Aye.
Mr. Questenberry.
Yes.
Mrs. Sheffer.
Yes.
Passes 7-0.
Thank you. That was nice. We will take a short break and give folks an opportunity to congratulate nominees and winners who might still be present, I believe. Yeah. And there are cookies in the back.
Yes.
We enjoyed our little break. Now we'll reconvene to finish off the remainder of the agenda. And first on the agenda, I'll just go ahead. We have a quorum present, Mr. Unger.
We need one more.
Uh-oh. Oh, Jim's here. Okay. So the next item on the agenda is public comment. Do we have any requests to speak?
Yeah, yes. Yes, we do. I'll use my inside voice. Gail Stoneberg from the Assistance League. Gail, are you? Oh. It's always read the instructions first.
Oh. Okay, so we don't have any currently have any requests to speak. Is that what I'm surmising? Is there anyone who would like to speak to the board on any item that's not on the agenda that has not submitted a request? You can come forward if you'd like. Okay, seeing no one, we'll return to the agenda and we'll deal with correspondence. We had three letters, as my computer catches up with me, that dealt with the counselors and librarians. and they were not in favor of the cuts. And so we'll move on to item 8.01, state budget. Mr. Miller.
Thank you, Mr. President. A lot of activity and anticipation of the governor's May revise in a couple of weeks. Excuse me. I think two items of note to bring to the board's attention would be SB 69, which was a bill introduced that has an alternative funding mechanism to what the governor had proposed. Essentially, what the governor proposed was to create three pots of money for school districts to draw upon. One pot would be equivalent to the currently reduced revenue limit for revenue limit districts. There'd be a second pot of money which would be allocated to school sites with a certain concentration of EL and poverty students in it. And the third, an attempt by the Democratic Party of the state of California to present to the people at least a different idea of what mechanism for funding schools should look like. Be very interesting to see what happens, not only in the final analysis of that bill, but also as we move into the governor's May revise in 2 weeks. If nothing else, the state Senate Democratic Party has put a lot of pressure on the governor to justify and defend his proposal, and they're only one of many voices that have criticized his proposal for its reasons. So we want to pay very close attention to that. It could have some impact on basic aids as it opens up additional funding for revenue limit districts than it has generally followed that basic aids would see some benefit out of that also. And then finally, there's been a great piece of news. I know that for years and years and years, I've reported that the state has fallen short of its prediction and forecasts of revenues and how they've over-forecasted revenues and why don't they just get it right? Well, in this particular case, they under-forecasted their revenue by a substantial amount, $4.75 billion. And it would be extremely interesting to see how the governor handles that excess money, because it was money received but not budgeted. And so it's money in this fiscal year. And how he handles that will say a lot about his direction and focus on education for the future, too. We'll see. It'll be interesting.
May revise? Is that where we'll see what will happen to that excess revenue?
Yes.
Is there ever excess revenue?
Yes. And I forgot to explain to those who aren't quite familiar with it, the May revise is the governor's changes that he would put into his budget proposal that he initiated back in December. So the governor rolls out a budget proposal in December. He waits 5 months. What changes during that 5 months then goes into the revised budget, which he issues around the middle of May. I think this year it's May 19th. I'm not real sure about the specific date, but it's after the 15th. And that May revise is when all of the changes that have taken place in the state's economic fortunes are absorbed into the budget forecast for next year.
Mr. Miller, would using that the surplus money that the state now has to more fully fund Prop 98 be a priority, be considered a priority?
I don't know. He has ignored Prop 98. For the purposes that he is constructing this new mechanism, Prop 98 hasn't come into play. And so I think one of the benefits to San Luis Coastal of that excess money would be a funding of our mandated costs that he owes $8 million to this district. And he could use that $4.75 billion in order to make a huge dent in what I think is a $2 to $3 billion problem for the state of California, and unpaid mandated costs. So that's my thinking. And honestly, in all intents and purposes, Prop 98 was a well-intentioned, well-crafted, and powerful bill to fund education in the state of California. But it was almost too powerful in the sense that it became it made education the big dog on the block and the one that always got whacked when there was a problem. And now that the state has managed to put a collar on this dog and ignoring Prop 98 and getting away with it, I don't see them actually opening the opportunity again. So that's my thinking about Prop 98. I could be wrong, but I have heard nothing that says Prop 98 on it in the last 6 months.
But have you heard anything that suggests mandated cost reimbursement, or is that just something that you're hopeful
about? I heard
a
little bit about it, but it's just a little bit. But it makes a lot of sense. So not that that means too much in Sacramento, but we'll see what happens.
Thank you.
Chris? Well, I think there's also some talk about paying back the deferrals.
Yeah.
You know, I think people would like to see that because a lot of the districts have just been completely whacked on deferrals. They got to somehow fund the Common Core standards, and that's coming down the road. What's the cost of Common Core standards? Is something like $300 million, isn't that right, statewide? Who knows, the mandated costs.
Deferrals is big. Deferrals. They did make some attempt at paying back some of the deferrals. Yeah. The Common Core has got everybody tied in knots because the investment necessary to provide the textbook and the learning materials is huge. And
move on to the preschool licensing authorization for Baywood Elementary, item 9.01. And we'll suspend the rule on reading this resolution. We'll just have Mrs. Shields make her presentation.
Thank you. We excused Mrs. Dinelli to go with her staff and celebrate her Teacher of the Year, so she sends her apologies for not being here. But I'm here to say, first of all, thanks to your leadership and your ongoing support of Initiative 3. We have 3 successful all preschools here in San Luis Coastal. And I'm here to ask you tonight to authorize the licensing process for school number 4 at Baywood Elementary School.
Okay. Anybody in the public like to speak on this item? Seeing no one, we'll bring it back to the board. Mrs. Shepherd.
I'd just like to say that I think that our support of preschools in our district conveys a belief and a strong desire to have our children have as many safety nets in place as early as possible that will facilitate their learning and their ability to be successful, high-achieving students from a very young age and all the way through. If there's no further discussion, I would move to at this time, we'll make a motion to support this.
Okay. Motion by Mrs. Sheffer, second by Mr. Unger. Anybody else have any questions or comments? All in favor? Roll call vote.
Mrs. Sheffer?
Yes.
Mr. Unger?
Yes.
Mr. Millar?
Yes.
Mr. Questenberry?
Yes.
Mr. Buckman?
Yes.
Mrs. Roger?
Yes.
Dr. Eisenrath Rogers? Passes 7-0.
All right, thank you. Next, we will move on to supporting the grant application for new school buses. This is an unusual thing to come up at this time, Mr. Guy.
Yes, it is kind of an unusual thing. Jeff Guy, Facilities Director. Good evening, Board, Administration. I'm here tonight really to introduce Annie Sharp. She's our transportation supervisor. She hasn't been here quite a year, but she comes to us with a great deal of experiences at many different levels from 4 different districts. One of them in particular is capturing grants, and this is a big one here. And with that, she'll share with you some details about the grant for some buses that she has managed to capture this year.
Good evening. Thank you for having me. I wanted to share mostly what these grants...
Okay. I wanted to share what these grants really mean to us. Just break it down. They'll mean 5 brand new school buses, full-size school buses at no cost to the district. It will mean 6 of our buses will have particulate traps installed labor and installation at no charge to the school district. That will bring them up to the EPA compliance that we have to be at by January 1st. The other would be there was some money left, so we applied for infrastructure. So one of it would be a filter cleaner, and normally when you send the filters out, they charge you $1,200. So now we've eliminated that cost, as well as everything the mechanics need to make sure that they stay running well. So it's an awesome grant. Should I tell them how much it's worth?
Yes, especially that.
This is my favorite part. We're $65,000 shy of $1 million of free money. Or cash and prizes.
Now, were you aware of this grant possibility and pursued it?
Oh, yes. I love grants.
Excellent. We'll keep going.
I will.
What percentage of our fleet does this bring to the new particulate matter standards?
We'll have four remaining ones, and that will be the second wave of new buses because there are no traps available to put on those buses. For the buses that are remaining, all of them will be in compliance.
Excellent. All right.
So we'll be done with that. And the important part is those six are our special needs buses, which we desperately needed to keep on the road.
Fantastic. Amazing initiative. And just thank you on behalf of the board. Any other board members, Marilyn?
Yeah, I just would say thank you also. Obviously, you were a terrific acquisition. I don't know who lost you, but I'm awfully glad we got you.
Thank you.
Thanks for your hard work.
If you have any more questions, I'll be happy to answer.
With that achievement there, we would like for the board to adopt the resolution supporting the application.
Okay. Jim.
Can't forget that part.
I move the adoption of resolution 19-12-13.
I'll second.
All right. Let's see. Anyone from the public want to address this item? Okay, seeing no one, we'll bring it back. We have a motion by Mr. Questenberry, second by Mr. Buckman. Any further discussion? Roll call vote.
Mr. Questenberry.
Aye.
Mr. Buckman.
Aye.
Dr. Eisendrath Rogers. Mrs. Roger.
Yes.
Mr. Unger.
Yes.
Mrs. Scheffer.
Yes.
Mr. Millar.
Aye.
Passes 7-0.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Yes. We will move on. Where are we moving on to, Jim? My computer just went down.
905. Resolution.
Oh, 905. Oh. Okay, Mr. Pinkerton.
Okay. Well, on February 19th, 2013, the board adopted resolution number, I believe it's 8-12-13, not to employ, or reemploy, I should say, certain full-time certificate employees for the 2013-14 school year because of a reduction or discontinuance of particular kinds of service. Over the past month, we've actually, you know, thankfully to SLCTA that they've worked with us in terms of coming up with a settlement agreement, which has actually helped the district not to have to go through a really expensive layoff hearing process. And so that settlement agreement is here for you to approve, as well as the final resolution, which will unfortunately be a reduction in some of the positions that were brought forward to you on February 19th. So I'm asking the board today to approve the resolution that's included as well as the settlement agreement. All of the employees that are being laid off through this resolution will go on a 39-month rehire list. We will be contacting them, helping them. I'll be setting up individual meetings with each of them to kind of explain and answer any questions that they may have, as well as, you know, there will be some people that will probably be getting their jobs back even as soon as the end of the school year.
Okay. Anyone in the public like to address the board on this issue? Okay. Seeing no one, we'll bring it back to the board. Marilyn?
If there is no board discussion, then I would say I'm very appreciative of the efforts that were made by SLCTA and the district to try to resolve issues related to this and to maintain employment for as many employees as was possible. And I would move approval of resolution number 2012-13.
Second it. Okay, we have a motion by Mrs. Roger, a second by Mr. Questenberry. Any further discussion? Roll call vote.
Mrs. Roger?
Yes.
Mr. Questenberry?
Yes.
Mrs. Sheffer?
Yes.
Mr. Millar?
Yes.
Mr. Unger?
Yes.
Mr. Buckman?
Yes.
Dr. Eisendrath Rogers? Passes 7-0.
Thank you. And we will move on to item 10.01, status of the San Lucia Regional Occupation Program Joint Powers Authority. Dr. Prater.
For the last few months, we have discussed this item of withdrawing from the existing ROP-JPA, and since the discussion, the board has acted on withdrawing its decision to withdraw on the condition that we maintain our existing ROP-CEE courses and if possible, continue to expand on them. As you saw tonight, we have a very successful ROP-CTE program, and we continue to value that. It's as evidenced in our strategic initiatives. So the reason I'm bringing this for you tonight, knowing that you've already acted, is that there appears to be some difficulties on the current ROP-JPA board. And those difficulties have to do, even though 5 out of 6 of the districts that participate in the ROP-JPA have withdrawn via their individual boards' actions, the board of the ROP-JPA, which is its own LEA, has not brought forward the withdrawal letters or action requests from these individual boards. So the discussion is here tonight not to revisit the decision as much as it is just to bring discussion forward or ask clarifying questions or answer clarifying questions you might have as it relates to in this packet here for your review. And there is no action item per se. There's discussion. And in addition to that, there's a follow-up meeting. The regularly scheduled ROP-JPA meeting is May, I believe, 22nd, which follows our next board meeting. And the reason I'm bringing this to you is I really believe that the ROP-JPA board heard commentary and comments of concern from the public, enough to warrant this emergency meeting here, which discusses the concern. With that, it's my understanding that the May 22nd board meeting, they're prepared to act on, I project this, but it looks as though they're prepared to act on those letters of request for withdrawal. I'm bringing it to your attention really to let you know that I believe that that this will ultimately prove successful to withdraw for our district. However, there will be some sort of bumpy roads along the way, and I just wanted to bring it to you for any questions you might have.
Anybody in the public would like to address the board on this item, withdrawal of the district from the Santa Lucia ROP? Okay, seeing no one, we'll bring it back. Ellen, or
go ahead.
Okay, Ellen.
It's my understanding that hasn't Cambria withdrawn and received their contribution, or I'm sorry, Coast Union, they successfully withdrew and received their money back. So if
that's correct.
Okay, so I guess my question is, I'm curious as to how one district has been able to successfully do that, and yet we're apparently being stymied somewhat. So can you shed any light on that?
My speculation is you're correct, first of all, that Coast Unified withdrew from the JPA, I believe, last year, maybe 2 years ago now. And by doing so, and the reason it was accepted, is it really didn't threaten the existence of the JPA itself. With 5 out of 6 districts requesting to withdraw from the JPA all in the same year. What it amounts to is the dissolution of the JPA. And so that's why when I say bumpy roads and some disagreement, is that the one district that's not willing to withdraw is expressing great concern over its dissolution. So if I could be so bold, I think that's in essence the concern. The reason this is being stymied, if you will, is because Paso Robles actually relies on this JPA and to maintain their courses and their programs, with my understanding. So this does come at some degree of risk. I understand that. But my job is not to concern myself with the wellness of other school districts, but rather what is in the best interest of our school district and guide direction, or at least provide suggestion for your direction. And what we're left with is, and you'll probably learn this tonight, is that there's fewer and fewer reasons why we would want to participate in a JPA at this point, given the funding from the state.
Thank you, Mark.
Thanks. I just want to thank Dr. Prater and Walt and Jim for being at the last meeting. It's good moral support. There is Paso Robles School District, which is clinging on to the JPA. We did meet in closed session, and there is a schedule of actions that that will unfold. It is moving forward.
Thank you. As a board, we voted to submit our letter of withdrawal, and I still fully support that position. However, I've come to realize that I am not as well-versed as I could be or probably should be on exactly how the JPA works in terms of funding, why they have our money. Mr. Miller made mention of invoicing them, and I didn't understand how that worked. And so is there anyone available who could give me just a very rudimentary explanation of how this works?
Dr. Dalkeskamp.
Thank you.
So in 1982 is when we signed that agreement. That's 31 years ago, and at that time, funding was going from the state directly to the JPA, ROP-JPA, to then distribute and develop programmed. In addition to that, we spend more general fund money to support our CTE programs and our ROP programs. And so I know we're busy invoicing them, and because we do spend so much additional money, we shouldn't have any problem recouping all the money that rests with the JPA right now.
Can I ask a quick follow-up
question, Mark?
So the funds
that are at stake are funds that we paid in and that we're invoicing against. Are there additional reserve funds that we're required to maintain with the JPA for economic uncertainty, that kind of thing?
Mm-hmm. The past years, it's been 3%. This year, they started off by reserving 10%, but then through board action, reduced that to 3%.
Okay, great. Thank you, Mark. Go ahead.
I just wanted to, at the beginning of the JPA in 1982, there were some really important reasons to do it. There's EDCO that gives benefit to JPA. When the state was giving us ADA allotment, there was benefit to the JPA existing, and that has changed now, especially in our situation, in Coast situation. And I don't want to take this as a defense because things have changed dramatically in the world in terms of funding for the RPJPA. But just to give you some background, part of the Ed Code on ROPs is that they go out and there's the top tier is the business community, and we, the we work with the business community to get consensus within the region of what the needs are identified in terms of future employment, future need. And then that comes down to the ROP. So what that did with the JPA is it saved each individual entity, LEA, from having to do that same work. And that was number one. Number two, in terms of writing curriculum, we could each have written curriculum, or as it was, as it progressed through, the JPA was able to write and approve, get approval for curriculum at the state level, which at the time, in 1982, was fairly difficult to do in terms of getting the A through Gs. And so that's been accomplished. As Rita said, the funding model for the districts, we're not getting money from the state. The money has recently, was it wrestled 2 years ago or 1 year ago, that was now sweepable money?
Is it 2 years? Yeah, go ahead, finish up.
Sorry, 2 years ago the state made this money sweepable, which means it could be taken into the general fund. So districts across the state are taking it into the general fund and using it as they may. This board has made an important decision to protect that money for career technology and for ROP. So that's really important, and I think it's really important to this board. But many things have changed since the JPA was formed in 1982. So just a quick background.
I think it's important for the board to know, too, that the mechanism that we are going to adopt to protect and retrieve our money from the JPA is to submit an invoice to them. Our traditional invoice is about $550,000 to $600,000 a year. This time what we did was we looked at all of our ROP CTE activities except for the purchases of equipment, which we're going to fund out of the general fund. But we invoiced the ROP the other day for $845,000. That's a representative amount of how the general fund supports ROP CTE programs. And it is all allowable under the rules and laws of the JPA. So those are primarily teacher salaries and relate to courses that we offer within the district. So we have about $770,000. The exact amount won't be known until the end of the year, but we have about $770,000, which we've put in that they're holding on to at the moment, which upon dissolution we would expect to retrieve. And instead of submitting an invoice for our traditional $550,000, we've expanded it to exceed the amount of money that the JPA holds simply to pay our bills. And we will be receiving that in due course.
It is the course that's the question. And I don't mean like an ROP course. So there are currently six board members, and so a majority motion by the board members, all of whom are going to pull out except one, couldn't that force the agenda item on to... anyway, so that was just an idea of mine, and if it's possible to expedite things, because there seem to be a lot of folks with unsettled feelings about, you know, what to do next, and you know, and Pastor Robles definitely didn't want the JPA to go away. So, and then the other question I have is the economic analysis that needs to take place is, at least from Superintendent Sousa's answer at that meeting, didn't seem to be very complicated. So,
as your representative,
I'm not actually asking you that question, but you can certainly answer it if you want.
Dollars on the JPA are not going to be my expertise, and Walton, Russell and I have worked on this over the years to see what and how we were going to fund it, how we were going to put our funding in, because we're basic aid. And so whatever we put in comes directly out of our general fund. And so before I've gone and voted as a member of this board to represent this board on the JPA, I've always cleared it with Mr. Miller before committing funding to the board. I will say, just as out of respect for this board and the way we do business, the ROP board is doing business and within the way it traditionally has been done. action will be taken.
Okay, and then it's kind of an academic question, but it'd be great to get an answer if it didn't cost very much. It strikes me as odd that our representative to the ROP board can't share what they talked about in closed session with us in closed session. I think that's a perversion of the system of having our own board representative to that board. So I wouldn't want to spend a whole lot of money on it, but it'd be interesting to figure out. But of course, we're not really likely to be on many JPAs in the immediate future. So at any rate, it was just struck me as kind of unusual because it'd be nice to know what was being discussed.
And as much as I'd like to share it, as we've learned.
Well, we wouldn't do it here, of course. Let me do it here.
As I learned the Friday before the meeting that you attended, and this was news to everybody in the room, the JPA board basically is, as someone used the term, NLEA. So it's a standalone organization, and its board and its members evidently get to act independently. Your board member doesn't, but it could conceivably be done. And so it's my understanding in talking with the attorney is it's a separate standalone closed session, and it would just be inappropriate. It would be as inappropriate as us.
I wasn't too impressed with that attorney, by the way.
So it's, you know, it's just a matter of letting the system proceed, and I think that just the way Coast got their money back.
Okay. All righty. Any other questions or comments about this? We did go to the public on this. Okay. Anything else? All right. Let's move along to the summer. Oh, no. We're at the adoption of Common Core standards.
10.02, actually.
Uh-oh.
What did I do?
Oh, I'm sorry. Thank you, Dr. Prater. I jumped ahead. Mr. Pink.
Up again. Tonight I bring forward to you a new job description that with the board's reductions at the last meeting. One of the items was to eliminate the IT or information services technology director and to combine that with our secondary it's director for secondary learning and achievement. So the job description before you basically kind of outlines some of the job duties for both that we've combined. You know, despite the fact that school services had come to the board, talked to you about the fact that we are kind of a little more lean in terms of district administration when we look at our overall staffing, we did recognize the fact that we needed to make district administration cuts just like we were with teachers and classified staff. So this represents kind of that movement to consolidate the two positions, and we hope to find somebody who has those skills. And I think overall, too, a little bit of the goal as well is to move the information services technology more into the learning and curriculum area, kind of like what we're doing with LOMS. And so hopefully we'll see that whole department kind of adapt and adjust with this new position.
Okay. Anybody in the public would like to speak to the board on this agenda item? Seeing no one, we'll bring it back to the board. I'll jump in here and I'll see any lights on. Do you know of other districts who have this kind of hybrid position, secondary director of secondary education and information services?
There's some. I mean, it depends. There's all kinds of different variables that go out there. So part of it is also kind of maybe a new beginning. And looking at the way the departments mesh, I know that Amy Shields, director of elementary education, will also be involved with that department too, so that it's going to be kind of a team effort to see how we can bring this all together and work together. But, technology is here. Innovation is upon us. And so I think with all the exciting things happening at LOMS, I think with the Wi-Fi, I think that's going to spread throughout the district. And the more that we can get those two departments connected, I think it's going to be really important for us to move forward.
Okay. Anybody else have any questions? Okay. And the action you need from us tonight is to approve the job
description. To approve the job description,
okay.
Yes.
And we can act on that tonight. Anybody want? Catherine?
Yes, I will move approval of item number 10.02.
I already did. Okay. I already did. We have a motion by Mrs. Eisendrath Rogers and a second by Mr. Buckman. Any further discussion by the board? Seeing none, all in favor?
Actually, you see some.
Ah, in the nick of time, Mrs. Rogers.
I just would say that my take on this, and I'm not an educator, and nor am I an IT person, but it seems to be two very disparate skill sets that we're looking for in one individual. So I'm interested to see how it works out for us in trying to find that very special person.
Absolutely.
Okay. All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Passes 7-0. Thank you, Mr. Pinkerton. And next we will have the 10.03 adoption of ELA and Mathematics Common Core and Next Generation ELD State Standards. Mrs. Shields, Dr. Dilkus-Camp.
Good evening. Last Friday, hopefully in your Friday notes, you received the first in a series of Common Core updates in your Friday notes. Our goal is to provide you with timely and useful information on how San Luis Coastal is transitioning to the Common Core. You got a little preview tonight from our Teacher of the Year, kind of set the table for us that ready or not, they are coming. Our first update was an overview of the Common Core in ELA and math, as well as a preview of the next generation ELD standards. This Friday, you can look forward to information on how our state's public four-year university systems are revising entrance course guidelines to provide directions to high schools developing Common Core aligned courses, as well as the latest information on the SAT college entrance exam and alignment to the Common Core. A week from Friday, we will be launching a San Luis Coastal Unified School District Common Core website for information, updates for parents, staff, and of course, your school board. In your board agenda item, we described the major components of our district plan to implement the state standards. We began in the 2011-12 school year with an awareness phase. This school year and next are what we're calling the transition years to be fully in place in the 14-15 school year. Tonight we are asking you to adopt the Common Core State Standards for English Language Arts and Mathematics, as well as the next generation ELD standards. As we transition to the Common Core, we are simultaneously preparing our students and teachers for the demands of the Smarter Balanced Assessment Consortium assessments that will replace the CST assessments in 2014-15 school year. Dr. Dilkus-Camp and I would like to share a few highlights of the major shifts in the Common Core standards, and we'll begin with ELA.
These three major shifts, it's not that we haven't been doing some of this work, but there's definitely more emphasis here. The Common Core standards are more focused and more coherent. So instead of having a list of standards in different domains, what we have are standards that can come together, that are coherent, and that allow us to provide this type of focus. Nonfiction, I'll talk about a little bit more in just a bit. The idea of evidence from text, as Sherry Newell shared with us, and how students need to support their ideas with evidence. And then the fact that the texts that we are asking students to read are becoming more complex, and that through those texts they can further develop their academic language. In terms of nonfiction, and there is this shift for us to include more nonfiction writing and more nonfiction reading. And so what you see here, many times in elementary we tend to, and they look very different now. They're organized into two main parts because it's about helping our students to create meaning. With 21st century type of skills,
working collaboratively, interpreting and producing writing, as well as learning how the English language works. And probably the most important shift here is that the ELD standards are not separate from the English language arts ones. They are intended to be used with the Common Core English Language Arts Standards, not in isolation, and that is an important shift.
The Common Core State Standards in mathematics include two types of standards. First of all are the mathematical practices. These are the set of eight skills and processes that we want all students to develop as part of their study of mathematics. These eight practices begin in kindergarten all the way up through 12th grade. They are what I would refer to as the habits of mind of a mathematically expert student. The second type are the content standards. These are the specific mathematics the students are expected to learn at each grade level or later on at each course. The Common Core State Standards in Math demand that our students develop foundational knowledge on critical concepts. As you can see from looking at the eight mathematical practices, students must not only become efficient and accurate in developing computational fluency, they must develop a deep conceptual understanding of core content and understand why a mathematical idea is important. It's not enough to just get the right answer anymore. In addition, students are expected to be able to apply math concepts in real-world situations. So as you can see from reading these, we're really upping the rigor, and we're going to be asking our students to do a lot more. At this time, we're happy to answer any questions regarding the Common Core.
Oh, Chris.
Sure. I'm excited about the Common Core standards. I'm excited about what I'm hearing. I hope and pray that they're able to really do the assessments that inform instruction, because I think that's going to be vital, and how we do that, how the state handles that, it's going to be really important. I noticed there is some controversy about the amount of literature that is going on in high school, the 30-70%, and concerns. I'm glad you addressed those, but I have read concerns about whether there'll be a lack of literature instruction as opposed to facts, you know, just the facts, ma'am. Something I think is kind of interesting, too, and we did learn about this at CSBA, and I hope there's a place for people, for those so-called introverts, to be able to work individually on things that they can maybe bring forward on the collaboration. So I'm hoping that's the case. And then finally, I think with the math, I sent something to you about preschools and math, and I think not only does it start in kindergarten, but I think that way of thinking can begin in preschool as well, and I'm excited about our opening another preschool and hope that we can incorporate some of those things in that.
If I can respond specifically to your preschool comment, this year all of our preschool and transitional kindergarten teachers were able to spend 3 days with our math consultant learning about strategies that will help prepare our children to be ready to dig into the Common Core State Standards when they get to kindergarten.
Thank you. I'm particularly excited about the Common Core Standards. The more I learn from you guys, the better. It seems to me that what we're finally looking at is NCLB fading away, and we'll be not teaching so much to the test, but teaching to the students and the students' capability to deal with complex issues. So I'm very excited about that. I do have one question. We talked about the awareness phase, the transition phase, and when I go to the CDE website and when I look at articles in EdWeek, there seems to be a lot of emphasis on parent involvement, community education, and I did hear you say that there's going to be a website. I'm wondering are you anticipating any other help? Because this is going to be not only a transition for our staff and our students, but parents are going to be seeing, as I understand it, different kind of homework.
We also have plans to update parents by providing our principals with Common Core information that they can include in their newsletters.
I saw Kirk Collins doing some very difficult math work in front of his parents at Open House recently. I've seen difficult problems in school newsletters already, and asking families to go home and come up with the solutions to getting that conversation going. And a lot of education already happening through our school newsletters to let them know it's a coming. Other things that we have planned for next year include some community nights for parents to come and hear from the experts, be involved in doing the math that their children are now doing. We hope to get the word out and be as aggressive or as assertive as we can to get to parents' questions so that they can hear from us.
Okay, thank you. That's great.
Yeah, I just want to comment a bit on the approach to teaching math that I've had the chance to observe at both C.L. Smith and at Hawthorne. It's interesting to me because I was educated in a different fashion, and I was watching the work they were doing with fractions and introducing the number line earlier, and kids working with that, and then trying to do some representational drawings with graphs. At the same time, they're working with the problem. I think the thing that to me is most striking is it's not as perhaps in some ways prescriptive as something that's more of, trying to get the students to discover different ways of visualizing the same problem. So I think in some respects, it seems to me not as efficient in a way, but it also seems to me a way that different students can access it and perhaps find a way that helps them make sense of what they're doing and seeing it in a different way. So to me, it's interesting. Some teachers have expressed to me a little bit of concern that we're still going to be doing the CST and how this may impact it. I have a little more faith in that. I think if anything you teach well is going to prove itself out on the standardized testing. But anyway, that's just an observation.
I like seeing words like persevere and reason and model. I think they're important. They indicate an approach that will involve more deep thinking, it brings in everything else into the study of mathematics. I think in a way it brings in language, it brings in the ability to read a little deeper, to explain. Visiting schools recently, we heard teachers saying, what is the evidence for your answer to these little elementary kids? And the kids would explain their evidence. It wasn't just 2 + 2 = 4. It was show me how you got there. What does that mean? What would happen if we did it this way? I loved hearing a teacher say when a student came up with an answer that wasn't correct, saying mathematicians make lots of mistakes. You're a mathematician, and you've got to sort this out. Let's try again. And realizing that it perhaps lends itself to learning by rote in some respects, but I'm very excited to see this deeper, more kind of holistic, if you will, approach that draws in so much more than memorization. So I'll be curious to see it more in action.
And I failed to go to the public. Anybody in the public want to address this issue? Okay, seeing no one. It is my hope that once the Common Core adoption is completed and the assessments are in place, that we'll stick with it long enough to really determine whether this is a fundamentally good approach to education. We seem to try to change horses in the middle of streams a lot in public education. And this is going to be an enormous undertaking, so I hope we stick with it, find out whether it works. So thank you for your presentation. I don't know if anyone else wants to ask any questions, and we will look forward to the next update. Thanks.
Okay. If I could just
say, you know, and to tag on to what Ms. Sheffer was saying, if you think about education and our purpose is to develop knowledge, you can't develop knowledge by just learning how to do something somebody else did and to learn a procedure. Mathematicians and anybody in any profession tries to create new knowledge, and that's what I think Common Core does. It really taps into our teachers' thinking and our students' thinking so that we are developing knowledge. And so we're asking you this evening, either tonight if you're comfortable.
Motion by Mrs. Eisendrath Rogers, second by the chair. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? That passes. We'll do the action consent agenda. Please let me know if you want something pulled. 11.01, approval of certificated and classified personnel. 11.02, disposition of surplus property.
Please pull.
Okay. 11.03, acceptance of donations. 11.04, approval of furniture and equipment requests. 11.05, approval of purchase orders. 11.06, approval of warrants and payroll. And 11.07, we've already handled. Okay, so a motion for approval of items 11.01 through 11.06. I'll move approval of those items. Okay, and motion by the chair, second by Mr. Unger. Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Passes 7-0. Mr. Buckman, 11.02.
Thank you very much. I asked to pull this item as I'm looking at it, and as I did look at it, computer equipment, PCs, laptops, monitors, and obsolete value zero. I know that there are PTAs. I know there's value to this type of material. Much of it in just the metals that are in it, and some that can be refurbished. So what I'm going to ask is if we can specifically, or if we would please look to PTAs and whether they can use this as fundraising, because there are companies that will pay to actually take this material. If we can look to churches or CAPSLO or other public agencies that can either recycle it and or get it repaired, and if any of it's in usable conditions, get this into the homes of families that can use it. So,
one of the things the board has asked us to do in the past is to take a look at these computers, wipe them clean, reinstall the operating systems, and then make them available to the poor, needy, and at-risk students of our district. That's what we traditionally have done.
Correct. Okay, so I appreciate it. Is looking at this item, it's valuing it at zero and it's calling for disposal. So is the plan right now to wipe, reinstall, and make available?
In order to be able to give it to needy families, it has to have a value of zero. If it has a value of $10 or $100 or $1,000, that's what the district would attempt to get.
Okay.
And so it would be counterproductive, I guess, if we put a value of dollars on this equipment.
Okay.
That would be the thing.
I think that's not my question.
Disposal does not mean going to the dump, as Mrs. Holmes just
Thank
stepped
you.
On my foot.
We will continue. We will continue to follow the plan that we normally plan, which is to make this material available.
Yeah.
And if I can suggest or please request, if any of it is not salvageable, that it be offered to a PTA or another organization that's going to do fundraising, and at the minimum that we find an organization that will buy this material from us because they're out there and they're begging for it. At least when I look on
another competing interest that's out there is just, the high schools run recycling programs, and there's quite a bit of value on the components inside of a computer, i.e. gold and other precious metals. So we have those competing interests to what you're bringing up, and if maybe we need what we need to do is bring back another item that this is a high dollar issue at some point. And so perhaps we can bring something back in a couple of months that talks about our current practice and then we can go forward with a different direction if you wish.
I'm sorry. I'm not asking for it to go in a different direction.
Yeah, I understand.
I just want to make sure. I appreciate you bringing me up to date on whether we're going to follow the common practice, and specifically if we're not going to be able to refurbish these that go to students, that we find a way to recycle them in a way that we actually or another organization within the district can earn money from them.
We do that.
Thank you very much.
You want to make a motion?
I'd like to approve item 11.02.
I'll second that.
Okay, motion by Mr. Buckman, second by Mr. Questenberry. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? No. 0. Passes 7-0. Okay, now we are moving on to 12.01, action on, no, did that. Did that too. No, 12.03, advanced agenda. Captain.
I would like to know if anyone would share my interest in reviewing the board policy on high school open campus during lunch policy that came in our Friday packet.
To comprehensive high schools being a relevant context to bring that to the board for discussion within that bigger plan.
Okay. Good.
Yes, but so should we wait until the task force has completed their work?
So we have two meetings in June. I plan on getting our committee started in June, as soon as the school year gets out. So I could bring it to the board at the June 25th board meeting, which could give the committee, which will work through the summer, some feedback that the board would be able to provide as they move forward developing these plans. If that's okay with you guys.
That would be excellent.
June 25th?
Excellent.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thanks, Catherine. Mark?
Thank you. As we go through this advanced agenda, I do have one, but it strikes me as somewhat ironical when you talked about the ROP and how to get things on the agenda, and here we are working to get things on our agenda here. I'm going to ask my fellow board members if they would be so good as to support a resolution that would change the way Prop 13 has been interpreted. It basically unfairly allows commercial property to be left out of the process. So the major part of the tax burden falls on homeowners. I do have a sample resolution, although that could certainly be changed. And I would also ask that if my board members are in agreement that we suspend the rule and have this possibly on our next agenda, so that it's adopted prior to the May revise.
I'm not in opposition to changing to recommending changes to Proposition 13, which is clearly unfair to homeowners and beneficial to businesses. There was an article that I read, I believe it was this weekend, discussing how, for example, Michael Dell of Dell Computers was able to save $1 million from the property taxes that he would have had to have paid on a hotel purchase in Santa Monica. I'm curious, though, Mark, I'd like to know more information about who recommended that, what's behind it. I think I'm not opposed to it, but I see that as being a huge discussion item and possibly with a lot of community interest in it. So can you give me more information?
This particular resolution comes from an organization called Evolve, which has been, their goal is to have 10,000 government agencies, cities, counties, school districts adopt this resolution as quickly as possible. I'm sorry. Was there a second part to that question, Chris? Or just who it was? I'm hoping that this doesn't take a lot of discussion on our part. It's pretty clear that the intent of Prop 13 was to include commercial property, and the one you just suggested is just the one that prompted me to bring this forward. But there's evidently about $6 billion out there in additional revenue that could be generated. Again, I'd like to bring this forward as an advanced agenda item. If we need further discussion, I think that would be great. As much as we put forward, I did contact Dennis Myers at CSBA today, I believe. And there is some legislation that's moving through the legislature that would basically do this take the same action, although it would have to come to a vote because it was a proposition and a constitutional change. But it is an item that's gaining traction throughout the state.
So we're looking for this on the advanced agenda. My only concern is the haste. I fully support the idea. I mean, that your last example is one of many, many examples where property actually has changed hands, corporate property. Companies have changed hands, and yet the property does not get reassessed. And, you know, especially if it's a big conglomerate that buys out, for example, Budweiser. And the homeowners, every time in the property changes hands, the house gets reassessed. And this is not true of the other. So I have an interest in this, but I'm not sure I'm interested in getting on the agenda in a hasty fashion.
Yeah, I have no problem slowing it down, as long as we get a shot at taking a look at this. So I'll change, I guess, my request to just if we can take a look at putting together a resolution supporting the way that Prop 13 is interpreted in the state.
I'm not sure how I feel about it, to be honest with you. For one thing, we're going to have a huge blowback from the business side. I've always been somewhat jaundiced about these resolutions and things because they don't seem to really make any impact.
And it's a huge problem. Proposition 13 is, I believe it's a huge problem, and I'm not going to go into why because it would take too long. But I would like to see it, and I would like to digest what the proposal would mean and what it could mean to our school district.
Could we get a Friday packet information on the resolution, and then we could take up discussion of it for on the agenda on the meeting after next week, not next week, but the week following.
Some meeting in the future.
Yes. Meeting in the future.
I'd be happy to work with Dr. Prater on gathering the information.
And then we would be better informed.
Appreciate it.
Okay.
Yeah, I will gather the information, work with Mark, and provide it in Friday notes.
Okay. Any other items for advanced agenda? All right, we'll move on to 13.01, I think it is. Yes, reports by board members.
Let's see, can I keep Walter here till 9 o'clock?
No. Not without physical force.
Not without physical force. I did get, just like to report, that I did get an opportunity to attend the state PTA convention, over 2,000 people the last 5 days, last week. Some good stuff. I got to hear Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, which was very interesting. Had the opportunity to visit Baywood with the district's superintendent's parents committee. A lot of what I thought was differentiated learning going on. Went to one classroom and there was nice, quiet music playing. And I was like, is that legal? I don't know. You can do that. But it was great. Very calming. Tomorrow meeting, I will be attending the sheriff subcommittee that's putting together the great program camps, the camps for the great program. And I'd like to leave this for Chris, but if you want to fill us in, Chris, on the visits that we're going to be making for CSBA this week with things. Oh, sorry.
Yeah. Thursday and Friday we'll be visiting our local legislators as part of BMAD Day, Board Member Action Day, as a CSBA-sponsored informational program for CACHO and for Bill Monig. On Thursday, we have an appointment with Mr. Monig's office here in San Luis, and Friday with CACHO's office, and there'll be several things we'll be discussing, including, I believe it's the SB 69, which is the governor's proposal, and what that would mean. CSBA does support SB 69 and different ways of looking at the governor's local control funding formula. There are some charter school issues that we'll be talking about, support for conflict of interest, Brown Act, things like that for charter schools. What else did I forget, Mark? I think those are the biggies. So it'll be some good discussions I think we're going to be having, and we look forward to being able to see our legislators, and they always welcome us, and we find them very amenable to hearing what we have to say.
Mr. Quesenberry and I, over the last 2 weeks, have visited, had the wonderful, invigorating, interesting opportunity to have visited C.L. Smith, Sinsheimer, Hawthorne, and Los Ranchos schools, and I think I can speak for both of us when I express our gratitude to the teachers and the principals and the staff who welcomed us and welcomed us into their classrooms and into their offices and talked to us about what was going on. We saw great demonstrations of what's happening in the classroom, and made me very proud to be part of this organization and serving our families and our community as we do. So thanks to all of them, and it was really fun.
Yes, I've enjoyed that immensely, Ellen. It's been a lot of fun. It made me almost rethink the fact that I went into secondary education. It's just so much fun to go into those classrooms, and the kids are so excited, and the teachers are doing a great job, and it's just a lot of fun. I just want to mention that Dr. Prater and I got to go to Morrobey High School to celebrate with them at an assembly, their Distinguished School Award, and their Teachers of the Year and Administrator of the Year. And so that was a special moment for me as a former Morrobey High teacher, and it's a recognition of a great school. We have great schools throughout this district.
I wanted to commend Teacher Bryn Bellier for a fantastic evening at the PAC with the Morrobey High School and Los Osos Middle School bands and his guest.
School Boards Association Delegate Assembly weekend after next. The big issue we're going to be talking about is called the policy platform. Right now the policy platform is hundreds of items that drive the legislative agenda of CSBA. It's going to be the proposal is to shrink it down into four major areas that will allow us to be more nimble and address the issues of California school boards more effectively and efficiently. So we're going to be doing that in about a week and a half.
Merrill.
Well, I don't want to be left out. So I've been rolling down a different track. And I went out to San Luis Obispo High School and took a look at I went specifically because I was interested in observing some of the older buildings on the campus. I'm not familiar with SLO High, certainly not the way I am with Morrobey High School, and we do have some areas at SLO High that are very tired and in need of refurbishment, and I know that we don't have any money to do it right now, but I wanted to familiarize myself with what we were dealing with. I mean, we have large classrooms that have only two electrical outlets, certainly not 21st century classrooms. And I'm going to go out to Morrobey and do the same thing, although I am more familiar with that site. And I had spoken to, I think it was Dr. Prater, about it, and we discussed the possibility at some time, perhaps over the summer, having a board field trip just to kind of take a look at our facilities at our comprehensive high schools, because they were not significantly touched by Measure A funding. So that's what I was about.
Somewhere around there. I'm going to have a couple of items as well. Let's see, which one I'm going to start with. Oh, the dismayed is too light a term, but I was just stunned to see the decision by the County Office of Education to pull funding for our pre-K programs here in our district. It gave a whole new depth of meaning to "no good deed goes unpunished," because
we're already addressing these needs. The superintendent, county superintendent, and his staff determined that the money could be better spent elsewhere. I just was kind of disgusted by it. But I wanted to end on a positive note. I was very pleased with the viewpoint from the superintendent. I thought it was an elegant, almost poetic statement of how much we value our teachers and what we want their lives and their professions to be and be like and what they do for kids. So I want to commend you for I know you had some help, but it was very well written. Wonderful Sunday above the fold, and I hope it got out to a lot of the parents and community members in our district.
And thank you, Walt. And I just want to just clarify, because it's been bothering me, as I submitted the viewpoint, I co-wrote that with Rick Robinette, my ghostwriter, and it was stated in the paper that I was the only author, but Rick and myself co-wrote that viewpoint, and he deserves at least 50% of the credit.
Well, thank you're the captain of the ship.
There we go.
So, okay, anybody have anything else to add? Good meeting. Thanks, everyone. We'll be adjourned.
Walt, I agree.